have to score the first three rounds.
Come here, Jim.
Look at the stare of the champion against the challenger. The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
He puts a left hook again. Jackson John Smith. He's on roller skates and he comes back down. Oh, and down goes Smith. What a knockout. Mamma mia.
This is InTheFight.net's In The Fight show on Sportinarium Radio. Talking MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Follow the show on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at ITF Show. And now from Philadelphia, Doc, Brett, In The Fight.
Oh my God!
Welcome back to In The Fight's The Way In, where we talk everything that occurred in the world of MMA and boxing over the course of the past weekend. I am the Doc. I am joined, as always, by Brett. And Brett, I think we have some big news to talk about here. Great news for one Diego Sanchez. The long journey with this schmuck Joshua Fabia is done and over with.
Oh, my God. I mean, look, I agree with you. I'm happy he has seen the light. Who knows what light Diego has seen, but nevertheless, the punishment is over. He doesn't have to hang himself upside down and get smacked around in a weird, creepy room.
He does not need to hang himself upside down and get smacked around. You're listening to the show live on Sportinarium Radio, sportinarium.com. As always, presented by Michael's Glass Company, serving the Philadelphia tri-state area since 1978. 215-338-3293. Tell them that we sent you to Paul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in the heart of Ardmore. A modern Italian steakhouse, DePaulsTable.com for reservations, and TKO Store, TEEKO Store.com for In The Fight Show merch. Let's kind of get right into this thing. A lot going on this weekend in the world of combat sports. We had Bellator, we had UFC, we even had some boxing. Let's start with Bellator 259. Chris Cyborg defeats Leslie Smith via TKO, 451 into round five. They couldn't cut it any closer, huh?
No, look, in a way it was, I think Cyborg was, landing a lot of damage throughout the fight. And just finally, at some point, Leslie Smith's body succumbed to the damage. And was like, she was tough, but, there's no way she was going to last the whole five. She was 9 seconds away, but in the end of the day, she just could not handle that kind of pressure. Her legs were getting chopped down, and mercifully, the fight ended.
How was this fight that much of a mismatch from the first?
Well, so I would say it was more competitive than the first. But Cyborg is a different fighter, too. A, she's older. So, look, you're not getting the best Cyborg version. However, she's a much smarter fighter, so she's able to conserve energy. The problem is, in the fifth round, she's still cracking a much harder punch than she used to. So that's why in the fifth round, she was able to really still hurt Leslie Smith. Leslie Smith is a tough woman with some skills. I think she has always gotten by more on her heart as opposed to her physical ability or technique. Once again, that showed. She tried. I'll give her that. She had Gilbert Melendez in her corner. And at one point, Gilbert Melendez was trying to speak so positively. He's like, you got this round. You're winning this round. Then Cyborg's corner said, no, you're not. You're not winning this round. Not even close. It was actually because of the bubble. There was no fans. It was kind of funny.
It's interesting that they're still sitting in the bubble up there. I mean, I don't know what Connecticut's state rules are and all that
stuff. It's the last week of it.
Okay, so that makes sense then, because everywhere in where we are in the northeast part of the United States of America, as of you're going to be listening to this on Thursday, on Friday, we're good to go, I guess. Or next Friday, I guess we're good to go. One or the other. It is what it is. Chris Cyborg, what's next here?
To me, I think the fight that makes the most sense and the fight that actually I think will draw more eyeballs would be her against Kat Zingano. The former bantamweight title challenger, Kat Zingano has such a real tragic story. I mean, she beat Miesha Tate. She was set to coach against Ronda Rousey in that Ultimate Fighter season. Then she blew out her knee. Her trainer slash husband kills himself. And then she continues to have more physical setbacks. She finally gets in the cage with Ronda. And even she herself admits she stupidly just rushed in, got submitted in 16 seconds. She's had so many different mishaps. She fought Megan Anderson in the UFC, literally got kicked and the toe went right in the eye. But nevertheless, she's so talented. She is actually the last person to beat Amanda Nunes. Stopped Amanda Nunes in the second round via TKO. Super talented, very good wrestler, and I think that it will be an excellent fight.
Are they going to do it, though? That's the question.
Yes, I believe that is the next fight. And I think Cyborg has even alluded to that. It's the only name left. I mean, she's taking care of Julia Budd. I mean, unless they're going to bring in, unless Coker brings in Kayla Harrison, which, I mean, that would be a smart move, but it's going to cost a lot of money. I don't know if, you know, to me, I get that, but you still have one more name that Cyborg could fight right now on the roster. Go do that.
In the co-main event, Leandro Higo versus Darian Caldwell goes to a split decision. Your take on this fight?
You know, it's amazing. Caldwell, who's a former champion, really has lost his form. And I really don't know if he's ever going to get back to that championship level. He is, you know, I think a step slower. And it's not, this isn't a guy who necessarily sustained a lot of damage in his career. He just seems to, I think like maybe a camp change might help him. He just is not firing on all cylinders right now. Something is missing.
Austin Vanderford defeated Fabian Edwards via unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. Vanderford, can he contend for the title?
You know, it's interesting. He definitely is going to get a shot at the title. He, you know, look, everyone they put in front of him, including Fabian Edwards, who is Leon Edwards' brother, he defeats. He's excellent at takedowns. I think his striking ability is still a touch on the rudimentary side. You know, to me, he really relied on the takedown and sort of the lay and pray style. Sort of like a la like a good old Josh Koscheck fight. So to me, I don't know if that's enough to win a belt. But nevertheless, you know, I am happy for the guy because he really is just sort of known for being Paige VanZant's husband. And, you know, like the guy is a legitimate middleweight, you know, a ranked middleweight in Bellator. He deserves to be recognized as such. All accounts is also a good guy. So,
speaking of guys, Hannah Guy defeated Valerie Lareda via unanimous decision, 30-27, 29-28 on two cards. This was your favorite fight of the night, huh?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, it was in one respect because I got to see Valerie Lareda, and she's gorgeous, but this was ugly. Hannah Guy, I mean, these was two people I think combined had four or five professional fights. This was just rudimentary. Hannah Guy really had no striking. She just was like all heart. Was able to take Valerie Lareda down because Valerie Lareda was trying to do moves out of the Street Fighter game. And just at one point in between, I think the second and third round, Valerie Lareda's coach was saying, stop with the spinning shit. And was like just literally laid into her. You know, I mean, she, you know, was arm barred several times, and I think at some point obviously it tore tendons because since the fight Valerie has shown that she has a full arm cast on one of her arms. This was not a good showing. I think this also shows you that the Bellator was pushing Valerie Lareda way too fast. I mean, the fact that she was the eighth ranked flyweight going into this, that's really a bad sign because this was an amateur fight on Showtime. And what's crazier is the new Bellator rankings have come out and Valerie Lareda is still ranked ahead of Hannah Guy, which makes no sense.
Is this their official rankings?
Yeah, it's their official rankings. Makes no sense.
So I think we need to justify rankings here. We could probably do a whole show on that at some point here in the summertime. but ESPN is the worldwide leader. So they tell us, right?
Yeah.
So they put out their MMA rankings, but all it is UFC fighters. So
yeah,
it doesn't mean anything. If we had to pick an organization, a program, a publication that puts out the definitive rankings, who is it? Is it still Sherdog? Is that who we should still go by?
Sherdog's pretty good. I guess for the ESPN rankings, I do think they include some Bellator guys. It's dependent on, you have to also take into consideration, it's dependent upon which division. There are some divisions where, for instance, like light heavyweight, a lot of the top light heavyweights are in Bellator right now. And John Jones isn't technically a light heavyweight anymore. But you think about heavyweight, you think about certain divisions, particularly in the women's side, like women's flyweight, except for maybe the top two in Bellator, all the rest of them, you know, are going to be in the UFC. So there's that. And then when you get to, yes, the UFC only and the Bellator only rankings, look, Valerie Lareda is going to sell. Sex sells. And she's a very pretty girl. So that's why they're going to try to maintain her status. You know, you can say, I mean, that's Paige Van Zandt had a, Paige Van Zandt and Michelle Waterson were the headlining fight on a fight night where Uriah Faber had his retirement match in Sacramento. So, you know, what are you trying to say there? What's selling? Is it the California kid or is it a bunch of beautiful women? There you go. So, and also, you know, obviously, you know, it's like Conor McGregor, I think right now was fifth. Somehow, I think magically before his fight, his trilogy fight with Poirier, he'll end up being fourth. You know, I love how these guys somehow get a bump up, you know, 8 months after they fought randomly. It's just like one random weekend, they get a bump up. So
it's like recruiting rankings in college football. You commit to a blue blood, you're a five-star. You commit to a school like Rutgers, all of a sudden you're a two-star and no one expects anything of you. They can exactly all kiss our ass on that one, though. Let's move on to UFC Vegas 27. I guess the real news coming out of this thing early on was Paul Felder announcing his retirement. Delco's finest, Paul Felder. I think people kind of thought maybe that it was coming. However, it was just like, hey, I'm done.
Yeah, you know, it was strange. You sort of thought it was going to happen. Then he took that, you know, last second fight against RDA, fought valiantly but lost. And then afterwards he said, yeah, the fire's back. But you didn't hear anything, you know. I mean, there was all these different rumors about lightweights fighting. You didn't hear anything about Paul Felder. And then suddenly he's retired. Look, I give him credit. It's tough to watch. I mean, I think physically he could still compete as a top 10 lightweight in the world. Remember, he is also the last guy to defeat the current lightweight champion, which he, by the way, was sure to point out in the post-fight press conference, and I would too. But credit to him, I think he just recognizes, like, look, I have other interests in my life. I'm doing very well with the commentary. He's spending more time with his family. So, you know, God bless. He was able to say, I'm out. And that, you know, that's okay.
It is okay. He's very good at commentary.
Yeah.
And you can find, when you find a niche like that, a niche, you know, a little spot for you, you kind of just roll with it. He doesn't have to get punched in the face, at least not on a regular basis anymore. I'm sure he's still going to do his thing with Rufus Sport and whatnot, but he doesn't have to. University of Sciences, or University of the Arts, I believe.
In the arts, yeah.
Which I forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't know how well he's going to be received in King of Prussia. So Bill Algeo was fighting Ricardo Hamosh in the main card. And Bill Algeo has a school out in King of Prussia. So I think it was Bisping's like, King of Prussia, it sounds European. And they're like, oh, there must be really tough people there. And so Felder's like, no, they're definitely not tough people.
All right,
he said excellent mall, but not tough people.
Well, of course, you get the guy from Delco. You're not going to sit there. I can only imagine. I don't know. I missed that one. I'll have to go back and rewatch it and check it out.
Yeah, so I don't know how well he's going to be received. I guess unless he's in the mall, he could be a good spokesperson.
Nobody's really from King of Prussia, though. It's just like a, it's like an area.
Well, there is a town. I mean, sort technically, of. It's Upper Marion. It's a part of Upper Marion.
Right, right, exactly.
It's so an I guess people in Upper Marion are going to be pissed at Paul Felder.
I don't think they care.
I don't know.
They probably don't care in Lower Marion either.
Well, he didn't make fun of Lower Marion.
No, that's true. Let's move on here. Main event, Rob Font defeated Cody Garbrandt via unanimous decision, 48-47 and 50-45 on two cards. Break this thing down. Walk me through it.
Wow. So Rob Font, who has, you know, I think we talked about this in the preview, similar to a Charles Oliveira, similar to a Beneil Dariush, has just slowly been improving fight by fight and just had this very, controlled style, was outstriking Cody Garbrandt. He had a definitive reach advantage, had a lethal jab and a 1-2, and a really good overhand right. And he was pushing Garbrandt enough to the point where he was able to crack through Garbrandt's defense. But also he was not going so overboard so as to either A, gas him out, or B, drug Garbrandt into a slugfest where he may have lost. But man, I mean, he landed, I think he nearly set the record for bantamweight strikes landed in a fight. And these were not pitter-patter. I mean, Garbrandt took a lot of damage in this fight. And it, by the end, it was getting tough to watch. Even though Garbrandt, he has the heart of a champion. And he, you know, was trying, you know, I think the judge who scored it 48-47 actually gave Garbrandt the fifth round, but he was just, I mean, he was getting beat up, and the amount of shots to the head made me feel very uncomfortable.
Should his corner, should Garbrandt's corner have considered chucking the towel at any point?
It's tough because, like I said, he really did sustain a lot of damage, but it was like Cody was doing just enough. He would take five shots and then he would land one of his own. So it would make you think, okay, he's still there. He's still in it. Because this guy is so tough. He has such a big heart. I think that's what would probably dissuade Mark Henry and the rest of his corner from doing that. But I got to tell you, sitting there watching that, by the fifth round, you know he's not going to win. You know, just save him for another day. You know, that last round, I think that's going to take a few fights off his career, unfortunately.
Let's talk about the winner. Let's talk about Font. Where does he go from here? Is he an elite fighter, or what is he? What's his role, so to speak, moving forward?
Yeah, you know, look, I think after you just defeated the number four ranked fighter, you were ranked third technically, and you just defeated a former champion, and not only just defeated him, you outclassed him. You know, there's only two guys left for him. There's Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. I think he's in a little bit of an unfortunate spot because obviously Yan and Sterling have to fight again because of the way that first fight ended. And Sterling right now is recuperating from the surgery. So unless he's willing to to sacrifice his spot as the next in line, I think he's going to have to probably wait like 8-9 months. Maybe 10 months, and then he'll fight for the title. I do worry about his ground game against either Yan or Sterling because Cody Garbrandt, who's not really known for a ground game, was able to take Font down fairly easily in the middle of the fight. So Sterling and Yan have a far more advanced ground game than Garbrandt. So that's something where, look, he's got 9 months. He needs to work on that. You know, I think one other thing, though, to point out real quick with respect to Garbrandt, you know, one to take into consideration is the fact, you know, he contracted COVID and he was one of the fighters that had a really bad bout with it. He supposedly had like blood clots in his lungs. He was out for like 6 months, not even training. So who knows? A, is he ever going to be the same fighter again? B, is this really, was that a 100% Cody Garbrandt? I mean, look, none of these fighters, and this is why I respect all of them, they never enter the cage or the ring at 100%. But who knows how compromised he is or he was because of COVID. So that it's just so, and I'm not taking away from Rob Font's performance. That was a fantastic, you know, that was a fantastic performance. And he has absolutely, I kind of view him as the number one contender with Jan and Sterling, just sort of one of those guys is the champion and Font's next. So he is elite. And I didn't want to take anything away, but it is something to mention with respect to Garbrandt and COVID. You can't ignore it.
It's going to be something to watch with a lot of fighters that have gone through this.
Yeah.
You even talk, you listen to some of the other athletes in other sports that have said, yeah, it basketball comes to mind. There was a bunch, and it's NBA playoff time. There was a bunch of guys that said the same thing, like, man, we didn't expect to have to struggle as much as we did coming back off of this. Let's talk the co-main event. Carla Esparza defeated Yan Xianan. I don't even know if I said that right. And the people in China are going to come after me. I apologize in advance.
You were actually a lot closer than I thought you were going to be.
Yan X.
Yan X?
Yes.
Yan Xianan.
So. Yan X the Magnificent.
Either way, it was a very rough night for her at the office. Carla was dominant in her TKO performance, getting her out of there in round two. This was old school grappler against striker, grappler wins. And, you know, Carla got her down in the first round. And as Bisping and Felder were pointing out, like, Jan looked lost. She had no idea how to get up. She was...
Maybe the crowd was in her mind.
No, so she cannot blame the crowd like Zhang Weili did because this was the UFC Apex. But they made an excellent point. At one point, Carla Esparza is in side mount, and one of the defenses for preventing the fighter from going from side mount to full mount is you put the leg closer to the fighter. You sort of cross that leg, and they're like, okay, yeah, she's doing it, but Carla wasn't even trying to get the full mount. Like, it was point, she had no idea what she was doing. There was no instincts. There was no effort to quickly, you know, improve posture, to move back to the cage, to wall walk, anything. And Carla, to her credit, not only was able to keep her down, but inflicted damage. I mean, she landed, a vicious elbow in the first round cut her open. And then in the second round, got her in the crucifix. It was second round. I mean, both rounds was able to take down Yan Xianan within 30 seconds, 20 seconds. And in the second round, got her in the crucifix position, and just pounded her out. It was very impressive. I did not see that coming. I thought that Carla was a good grappler, but I just found her, I always thought she was like athletically limited, man. I'll eat crow.
So where does she go from here then?
So I think this is one of those typical UFC quandaries. You have the fighter, you have fighter A who rightfully is now the number one contender. And you have fighter B who for whatever reason represents a huge business opportunity. Fighter A in this circumstance is Carla Esparza, who is now on, what, a 4 or 5 fight win streak, just beat the shit out of number 3 in the division, and also has a win over Rose Namajunas in the inaugural fight for the women's strawweight belt. So there is a storyline there. She's not overly aggressive and talking. I mean, literally Paul Felder in the post-fight interview was like, all right, now's your chance. Tell us what you want next. And she's like, Dana, can I please have a shot at the UFC strawweight belt? She's not great on the mic. That's not her fault. She's a fighter. That's all she, you know, I mean, you know, it would be great if we all had the skills of Dusty Rhodes or Ric Flair on the mic, but we, you know, or Roddy Piper. Some of us don't. Nevertheless, then option B here is Zhang Weili, who represents China. And as we all know, China has over a billion people, and there's just incredible resources from a financial and business standpoint. So which one is it going to be? I think they're leaning towards Zhang Weili.
You can always do an eliminator. You can always do a tournament. Do the tournament, Dana. Just do it.
What would the tournament would be? It would just be a number one contenders match.
An eliminator match, gets, sure.
Is an eliminator match a tournament match?
Technically, no, but I just wanted to point out my love for the tournament. Let's move on to the ladies. Let's stick to the ladies, I should say. Upset in the women's featherweight division, Norma Dumont defeated Felicia Spencer via split decision. Not a lot of people saw this one coming, huh?
No, I once again, I'm eating crow. I did not see this. Look, Felicia Spencer is, you know, a former title challenger. Yeah, I mean, Felicia Spencer has, in her short career, spent 40 minutes in the octagon with Cyborg and Amanda Nunes. That's really tough.
Now, not at the same time, though.
Not at the same time. It was one then the other. But it makes me wonder if all of the time spent fighting Cyborg and Nunes, sustaining all the damage she did, was the byproduct of what we saw Saturday night, which was very hesitant, gun-shy Felicia Spencer, was not really mixing it up, wasn't trying to use her grappling. And also, though, I don't want to take anything away from Norma Dumont, who in her first UFC fight fought at bantamweight, fought up at featherweight this time, put together some very nice combos. I don't know if that makes her a legitimate title threat, but she looked good. I mean, she definitely beat Felicia Spencer. This wasn't just, you know, oh, two women not doing anything. Let's just give the, you know, the decision on one of them. Norma Dumont beat Felicia Spencer, so we should definitely give her the credit she deserves.
In the opener, Edmund Shahbazyan falls to Jack Hermanson a week after they were supposed to have the fight. Did this live up to the expectations of what you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, Edmund Shahbazyan had the distinct advantage on the feet, had a great first round. Once he gasses and once Hermanson got a hold of him, it was over. He was just, you know, was able to get on top and inflict a shit ton of damage. It was, by the third round when they stopped the fight, it was really tough to watch. I mean, Shahbazyan was getting beat up, and there was a camera angle where you would see him get hit, and then you saw his head would, you know, bounce off the mat. He was getting really beat up. And interestingly enough, again, COVID discussion, Jack Hermanson had COVID, and he's like, look, and prior to COVID, he was known as having some of the best cardio in all the UFC. He's like, now I'm back in the middle of the pack. It was interesting how he mentioned that.
It's going to be a story for the next, you know, 5 years at least, of people who have had it, struggle with it. If it's changing, it could change fighters. Anything else on this card stand out to you that made you say, wow?
Well, so there was one of the prelims, David Dvorak defeated Juan Camilo Ronderos via submission, 218 in the first round. But what was special about it was a one-handed rear naked choke. So you only just had the left arm underneath the head and underneath the chin and was able to choke him out, which is very impressive.
That is impressive. Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't do that.
No, I can't do that either. Let's move over to the world of boxing. Let's move over to the Sweet Science, a unification night on Saturday, and it coincided with UFC fight night. So I don't get why, and we've talked about it. There is a crossover. There's your extreme ends where you have your boxing purists, you have your MMA purists, but then there are fight fans who will watch everything. Why would you put it up against each other?
Well, and on top of it, it's the same network. So
that's what I mean.
So, because the point I'm raising there is, I believe it was, So the night of UFC 244, which was Nate Diaz against Jorge Masvidal, that was also the night of, on DAZN, Canelo Alvarez against Kovalev. And on, for whatever reason, the promoters on DAZN literally had Alvarez and Kovalev like sitting on couches waiting for the UFC event to end. So here you have a competitor to the UFC and a competitor to ESPN catering to the ESPN audience. why wouldn't ESPN do that with two events back to back? That makes no sense to me. Just have it, slow one of them down a little bit by 15, 20 minutes. It would have been fine. But for whatever reason, they didn't do it. And I'm sitting there watching Ramirez Taylor on my phone and watching Font Garbrandt on the big screen. And it was, at one point, I was listening to Joe Tessitore, and I'm like, wait a second, he's not talking about Font Garbrandt, is he? I got very confused.
Well, you watched it on your phone. Josh Taylor defeated Jose Ramirez via unanimous decision, 144-112, to become the undisputed junior welterweight champion. Does he have all of the titles, or are we missing anything?
No, he's got all of them, unless you and I would like to create a title and give it to him. Have the power to do that now.
He cannot take my belt. I am the world heavyweight champion, and nobody can take that away from me.
Okay, I'm glad you've anointed yourself the world heavyweight champion.
You're goddamn right. I got a big gold, baby.
I know.
I'm going to walk around the neighborhood with my big gold belt and challenge people.
I feel like you're going to end up on a list.
I hope not, but you never know. Look, I'll do the job for the right amount of money. I keep saying that.
That again, not really helpful for you going on a list.
That's a valid point. Let's get to the boxing. What was your take on this? You watched it via the small screen.
Yeah, I spoke with the hired gun, and we were in agreement with most of what we saw. Going in, I think you could tell sort of that Ramirez didn't have a lot of faith that Taylor could hurt him. And so, obviously, in the fight, in two consecutive rounds, Taylor knocks down Ramirez. In the first one, Ramirez comes charging in, and Taylor, who's an excellent counterpuncher, evades him and is able to land a straight, knocks him down. Then the second knockdown, which is a little bit more controversial, this I put on both the ref as well as Ramirez. So the ref was constantly like in and out, and almost like it was like he was fainting. And sometimes, when they come in to separate the fighters, sometimes he would just like touch them on their shoulder and then back up. And that's what happened. I believe it was the seventh round. And then Ramirez, look, you have to protect yourself at all times. Ramirez lets his guard down, and Taylor lands that vicious uppercut that put him down. And those two knockdowns are what won Taylor the fight. So, shame on Ramirez for not, it's one of the most basic concepts. You protect yourself at all times. So,
especially considering they tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. It's like one of those things you hear all the time, but I guess it doesn't register, but nevertheless, look, Taylor was really quick and accurate. It was a good fight. It was, for the limited crowd that it was in the theater that where the fight took place, I thought it was a live crowd. Good fight, competitive. I think that they should run it back. Zach thinks that Taylor should go up to 147 to fight Bud Crawford in October, which apparently is what Bob Arum wants to do. And then basically when he loses, which is what Zach and I both think, he'd then go back down and give Ramirez the rematch. So either way, I think it's pretty – obviously Taylor would like to beat Bud Crawford, but either way, you're going to be making a lot of money. So good for him.
That is true, and that's what it's all about. It's making the cash. Yeah. Let's move back to the world of mixed martial arts here. It's unbelievable that it's coming up in the next few weeks here, but The Ultimate Fighter returns Season 29, ESPN Plus, Tuesday, June 1st. The bantamweights, the 135ers, and the middleweights, 185, to kind of reset it here. Your coaches, Alex Volkanovski and Brian Ortega. What do we know about this? It seems like there was a big to-do made about it tough returning. You're going to be able to watch the old tough enoughs. They put out the rosters of who the fighters are, and we kind of really haven't heard anything. There hasn't been as much of a build as maybe there should be.
Yeah, except for last night they had a launch party show on ESPN, but the problem, so it was put up again, and you know, they're competing with, in America, they're competing with the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs. This is a really tough time, and for anyone who's trying to get any kind of semblance of coverage because of that, you know, every night you have all the different markets and fans watching these games, whether it's hockey or basketball. So they had a launch party. Mike, you'll be happy to know TJ Lavin, the host of your beloved challenge show, was actually interviewed for reasons beyond my
comprehension. Was he the host of the show? They should bring him in as the host of the show. No, that would be fantastic.
No, I think it was just to discuss the difficulties facing hosting a reality show with people who are removed from their normal lives, no cell phones, all that stuff. So,
you know, well, he would know. He hosts the world's hardest show, The Challenge, which I can't wait.
Exactly.
I can't wait for the finale of The Challenge All Stars, which will be out later on this evening after people hear this.
That's great. Well, just tell me if Amaya wins.
Well, I'm sorry, but Amaya is not in it. Can't help you there.
Yeah. Anywho.
Tech came back.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right. Well, he's gone now, buddy, but he was back.
But we did find it does appear. So there was some behind the scenes footage. So at least it appears as such that there's no more Tough Gym and they're doing all the training at the UFC Performance Institute. Now, I don't know whether they're going to be doing the fights. So the Performance Institute has several octagons. They could also do the fights at the Apex because that ring is always set up. But I think they actually sold or no longer rent out that property where the Tough Gym was. So no more Tough Gym, it looks like.
It makes sense, right? You invest all this money into this Performance Institute. You can hold television events there. Why, other than for aesthetics, would you go to essentially a warehouse down the road kind of thing?
I guess it's sort of the nostalgia factor. And
right,
I would bring over the piece of door that's still left from when Rampage completely destroyed that door. The bottom of it was still left on the hinges. I would bring that over as like a memento.
You put it on the wall. Obviously, comparing it to the professional wrestling when WWE brought back Tough Enough, they did it at the WWE Performance Center, as they should. It's this multi-million-dollar facility. You have all the best stuff. You might as well do it.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, I don't have necessarily a problem with where it's going to be. I'm real interested in seeing how it is presented, though. Who are they catering to? Are they catering to us, the original Tough fan? We're a little bit older. Is that who they're going for? It's on ESPN Plus. Or are they looking for the younger fan? Is there going to be drama? Is this just going to be fighting? What is it? That's what I want to know.
So just watching that launch party show, or at least bits of it, I got to tell you, it was not the most exciting thing. And to me, the TJ Lavin interview was when I turned off. Anyways,
That tells me something that they had
exactly. The point of interviewing. I think they're trying to educate people who were not familiar with The Ultimate Fighter rather than rekindle the flames, I guess you could say, of interest of fans who previously watched. It sounded like they were trying to educate a new audience, not necessarily a younger audience, but just a new clientele of people who are basketball or hockey fans who have ESPN Plus, who now get, as this with this added feature, the Ultimate Fighter series.
And we'll be sure to do some preview work on it. I know we're going to have some stuff on endtheflight.net previewing the fighters. There's certainly a Philly flavor to this program coming up. I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to watch it live. I don't watch anything live anymore. That's just how it is.
I think it's just dropped.
Okay, yeah. So it's not like I have to go to ESPN Plus at 8 o'clock on June 1st. It's 12:01 when I'm awake giving a 10-month-old their midnight bottle, because God forbid they move away from that damn thing. You know, I'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, that's my understanding, at least. Which is similar to the way Ultimate Fighter Brazil was on UFC Fight Pass a few years ago.
But that was, that had TV clearance in Brazil, did it not? First,
yeah, it was different in Brazil. So, and again, I don't know for our UK fans where I know this is going to be made available to them. I don't know where though.
So that's interesting. Then, how are the fights going to be? Obviously, they're all exhibitions. They all fall under that exhibition title, right? So yeah. I guess they can just do it without disclosing.
Yeah. The problem is you're going to have, whereas in the past, for instance, for us, the Ultimate Fighter would be on Spike TV at 10 p.m. Well, now it's going to be available July 18th. So the problem is people are going to post the results. So you're going to have to be mindful of that, whether on ESPN, Twitter, obviously all the sites. We're not going to do spoilers for that.
No, we never do spoilers. We won't do spoilers for anything, MMA, wrestling, celebrity boxing. We're not going to put that Jake Paul is going to take the dive, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or apparently the challenge.
Well, the challenge is real.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you're talking about.
As real as you being the champion.
As real as it gets. I have a belt. I will take a picture with me with the belt, and we will put it on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
I have belts in my closet too. What does that matter?
Yeah, but is yours a big gold on a white backing?
No, it's Sears, just like Miyagi's.
There you go. We're going to wrap up.
Karate is here, meaning the head and the heart, not the waistline.
A big shot with the big gold right across the head will knock you right out. And we have that coming back, too. Cobra Kai Season 4 coming soon. We're getting ready to hit in the United States. Memorial Day weekend is coming. That's the unofficial start of the summer season. What are you looking forward to in the world of combat sports, wrestling, boxing, MMA over the course of the summer?
Well, you know, it's definitely going to be a busy summer, which is great for us here in the fight. But honestly, a lot and from all different angles. For me, I guess I am super stoked that we're only 2.5 weeks away. Or no, yes, 2.5 weeks away from UFC 263. Then you have, the Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier trilogy, and the return of my favorite fighter, Miesha Tate. So
there's a ton going on. I mean,
there's so much
there is a ton. We're going to do a whole separate hour here. The Pro Wrestling Power Hour coming up in a little bit. We're going to take a quick pause, get some drinks, but you stay right here. We're going to talk about it. You know, that's what I'm excited for over the course of this summer is the return of wrestling fans to arenas, hopefully healthy and safely, but it's going to change the product. You're going to see fans continuing to come back to the world of combat sports, MMA. Conor McGregor is going to be fighting with fans. You're going to get that fan base. You're going to get the Europeans. You're going to get the Irish doing their chants, drinking their proper 12, all that kind of stuff. It'll be fun.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't even mention Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, right. Which is a little disappointing, but it's a big fight.
It's still a big fight. I would bet it's going to be announced within the next 2 weeks. We're going to have Francis Ngannou against Derek Lewis. I mean, granted, the first fight was literally the worst fight in UFC history. There was reasons for that. Ngannou had a mental breakdown. Derek Lewis had a really bad back. But if neither of those things occur, that's fireworks. That's just an amazing fight. We have the continuation of the light heavyweight Grand Prix over in Bellator. God knows you love a tournament. And we have the PFL, which is season format, which leads to a tournament. So, I mean, you're tournaments like tournament for everybody. Heavy. Exactly. I mean, you know, that's getting you going right now. It's going to be a great summer of fights. And what's great is you don't have to go anywhere else to get all your news and commentary. about that, as we also discussed the fact that Mike is simply a paper champion.
I am not a paper champion. I am.
You're as much a champion as Union Kane.
I bought myself a belt, and well, that's more than Union Kane. I'll tell you that much. I have more legitimacy than Union Kane. I can walk down that street and hold an open challenge. And what's going to happen? Absolutely nothing, other than the cops being called because some lunatic is walking around with a professional wrestling title belt, claiming that he is the real world's champion. I don't know. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. Stick with us for the Pro Wrestling Power Hour. I'm Mike, that's Brett. This has been The Weigh-In.